Welcome to Inside New Mexico. I'm Derek Underhill, and each week at this time, I have a conversation with the chairman of our Republican Party of New Mexico, former congressman of the 2nd Congressional District here, Steve Pierce. Steve, we missed you last week. How you doing?
We've got a lot of things keeping us busy right now, but appreciate you filling in, and Leticia, and the program was great. Today, we've got another good program. We're going to be talking to Freddie Lopez later in the second segment. He is one of the rising stars of the Republican Party, second vice chair of the Santa Fe County Republican Party, and just an all-around nice guy. But he's one of the emerging new leaders for us, and we're excited about it and doing everything we can to help these younger Republicans step up and be the face of the Republican Party.
He told me something I did not know. This is how the Republican Party is making inroads. There is a Republican on the Santa Fe City Council. I did not know that.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, there are going to be more, because as we go through the program today, we're going to be talking about some of the policies of Governor Grisham that have caused tremendous problems, and they're going to continue, and people are going to start voting differently. We can campaign, and we can tell people what we're about, but the most powerful thing is when they experience the hardships that come from the policies of Joe Biden or Governor Grisham.
And to that, it's very evident the governor wants to make New Mexico the abortion capital of the nation, in a way, almost a tourist destination for abortion. And now she set up the abortion hotline.
Yeah, it's set up in order to provide women who want to come from outside the state the resources they need and the help that they need to come here and get their abortions. Now, the effect of that is that in 2021, there were 4,900 abortions in New Mexico. And in 2022, there were 11,000. So we more than doubled, and we're on a course to match that 11,000. Now, most people would say, well, this really doesn't affect me, but let's talk about the numbers just a little bit. First of all, 6,000 of the 11,000 did come from out of state. That would tell you that the governor's plan is to actually more people in. In other words, she's trying to encourage people to come from outside the state. If you figure about $20,000 per abortion, and I've heard numbers above that and below it, but let's just use that as an average. And you multiply $20,000 per abortion times 11,000, you get $220 million that was spent here for Planned Parenthood. Do you wonder why they're fighting so much nationwide? This is one of the smaller states, $220 million. You can imagine the billions that come through the abortion from the taxpayer as they occur nationwide. Now, the soft underbelly of this discussion is that these abortions that are being paid for out-of-state women take money from the Medicaid funds, which are set aside for the people struggling with income issues, and it's to help them provide health care. The idea when Medicaid was started wasn't that it would be simply funding abortions for out-of-state people. It was supposed to be taking care of New Mexicans who are a little bit lower income and trying to pay for healthcare. So Medicaid dollars are going now to out-of-state women who the governor is telling, please come here on this hotline. And so it's a huge issue when people don't have access to standard healthcare. Let's say people who aren't looking for abortions at all, but maybe have the flu or something that they need to take their kid to the doctor, or maybe even put them in the hospital. The funds are not going to be there because the governor is spending so much on out-of-staters to come here and seek abortions. It's simply a political issue for her. It's one that drives a lot of people to the polls and supporting Democrats. But I will tell you, at the end of the day, it punishes people who are going to make ends meet.
I think the plan, as I mentioned, was to make it a tourist industry where people will come here, they'll stay in hotels, they'll eat out, they'll rent cars, buy gas, and so, you know, they figure they'll get their money back. I don't know. I mean, it's a very odd way of doing that.
Yeah, and you see that worldwide, not especially on the abortion issue, but on the healthcare issue. It's becoming so big to get healthcare in a lot of the socialist countries, and it's getting problematic to get healthcare in the U.S. And so you have medical tourism where people go around the globe into countries where it's easier to get medical procedures done of all kinds, whether it be heart surgery, treating cancer, or whatever. A lot of people back when I was in Congress, a lot of people from Britain were coming here because that socialist medical system there, it would take years sometimes to get a procedure that would be life-threatening if you didn't get it. And so people were willing to spend any amount of money coming here to the U.S. But now then people in the U.S. are going elsewhere looking for medical procedures. And so that parallel that you're talking about, the governor wanting to establish an abortion tourism here in New Mexico, is that example. Was well set worldwide already with other medical procedures.
And to the border, again, not only are people flowing over that we don't know about, they've caught some now that they've found are on the terrorist watch list. And how many didn't they catch? That's the question.
Yeah, that's the question. The Washington Examiner, Anna Giratelli, had a great article that was exposing just how many people on the terrorist watch list were captured just this year, 127. That compared to 97 for the entire year a couple of years ago. So we're on a pace to maybe hit four times as much in the terrorist watch list illegals who are captured coming in here. But that article, that same article, explains that at least half of the agents have been pulled from the field in order just to process the paperwork and transport the illegal immigrants that they are catching. And so when you pull half your field agents off the border, then you know that tremendous numbers of people are coming in without ever being touched at all by law enforcement. And so the fact that we've captured 127 on the terrorist watch list with half the workforce sitting back in the offices and not interdicting at all, it just tells you the amount of chaos that's going on at the border and the danger that it represents. On 9/11, those people had come here, a lot of, had come here even legally and stayed illegally. They overstayed their visas. Some of them had been here for years illegally, but came legally. Now then, they're not even bothering to come legally. They're just flooding the border knowing that there are huge gaps in it. And so you don't know how many people are coming over here to go into these sleeper cells and wait to be activated at a specific time. And so I think that the U.S. is going to pay tremendous penalties downstream. This open border that the Biden administration has created and our governor is being totally silent about it. All of those issues don't even address the fact that when you have too many people in the country, then they are willing to bid the price of labor down. So in a state like New Mexico, where the pay is already fairly low, now then you have downward pressure from people who come here illegally and just need anything to try to feed a family. There are not enough jobs to go around for all the people who have been flooding into the border. And so again, economic disaster waits in states like New Mexico because of our proximity to the border, but also because of the low incomes that already exist here, and then the downward pressure on those incomes from people who are here illegally just trying to feed a family.
Coming up in our next segment, I will be talking with Freddie Lopez from Santa Fe on Inside New Mexico.
National Guard and Reserve members are true leaders, both in the military and in the workplace. They are highly skilled and get the job done every day. Employer support of the Guard and Reserve, ESGR, can help you recruit top-notch service members to your workforce. Hiring Guard and Reserve members is good for your business and good for your community. Visit esgr.mil/employers to learn more.
Welcome back to Inside New Mexico. In just a moment, I will be having a conversation with Freddie Lopez. He is the second vice chair of the Santa Fe County Republican Party.
I think you're going to find him fascinating. He's from Santa Fe, and I think that he is the face of the future for the Republican Party. We trained over 1,000 people last year. We're on track to do the same thing or more this year. And all of those people that we're training become leaders either at the state level or somewhere in the counties.
With me in the studio is Freddie Lopez, and he is the second vice chair of the Santa Fe Republican Party. Freddie, welcome to Inside New Mexico.
Thank you so much for having me on, Derek.
Well, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you chose to become a Republican and then get involved with the Republican Party.
Well, I was raised here in New Mexico in Santa Fe, and I was raised by very conservative parents. And as you could know that so many people in New Mexico, especially in northern New Mexico, like Santa Fe County, Rio Arriba County, they are in San Miguel County. These are counties where there are so many people who are registered Democrats. And pretty much as soon as you're born there, you're just automatically stamped as a Democrat, you know. But we were all raised with conservative values because many of these areas are predominantly Catholic. Many of these areas are predominantly Christian. And I was raised in a non-denominational household. And, you know, my parents, they were conservative. And as I saw everything going by, it's like this was the narrative that I saw in Santa Fe growing up, especially as I was a teenager going to the Santa Fe Community College. It's like, oh, we are all progressive. We don't believe in guns. We don't believe in your freedom of speech in certain ways. We don't believe that life begins at conception. We don't believe in any of that. It's like everyone is like all together in this one, how do you say, mind think. Everybody's all thinking the same. There's this one quote that I think of, everyone's thinking the same, nobody's thinking, you know? And as I grew up, I had never really gotten involved in politics until 2016 and 2015 when Donald Trump ran. And I initially wasn't supportive because I was like, who is this guy? This guy's, you know, some real estate magnate from New York. How does he identify with me? But then when I listened to what he had to say, I was like, oh my goodness, this man cares. He knows what he's talking about. I identify more with this millionaire from the state of New York than I do with any of the other politicians. And he said it like it is. And then I saw all the Democrats in the media just going after him left and right. And I was just seeing with all these lies, I'm like, he must be doing something right. And it's like all the lies that came out about him, saying he's racist, saying that he's a bigot, he's a misogynist, all these lies. But yet when I did my own research, it's like none of that was true. None of that was true at all. But even then, I was, I guess you could say I was one of the first Democrats for Trump. And then after he got elected, I began to really dig deep into what my party is about, because it's like the party of John F. Kennedy, you know, the party of the people. That's what we were all raised at, is like the Democrats are the party of the people. They're the party of the poor.
Right. Republicans were just for big business.
Exactly. The Republicans were just for big business. Those are just people who hang out in the country clubs and stuff like that. That was the narrative. But as I really began to dig deep, I realized that when it comes to the Democratic Party, as someone who is half Latino and half black, and seeing that the Democratic Party was founded on bigotry and racism. I mean, they were the ones who literally wanted to uphold slavery in the South. And when I found that out, I'm like, oh my gosh, like, how is this even possible? Why am I a part of this? Why do I believe in this? And then how hard they fought against civil rights back in the 60s. I was just like, how is this possible? And then there was an individual by the name of Brandon Stroika of the Walk Away movement. I watched his video encouraging liberals and Democrats to walk away from the party. And when I watched that video, I was so inspired, especially from the information that I found out, that I decided, you know what? I can't be a part of this. And I don't want to be a part of this. So it was at that from point on. It was around, I would say, like 2018, 2015. I guess I could say I was still a Republican, but I didn't know it yet. I didn't know it yet until this point. So I became a Republican. After that, and then I got involved, you know, going to rallies, going to protests, especially in 2020 when we had the lockdowns against, you know, standing up for our rights at the Capitol against these masks, against these COVID lockdowns. And then after 2020, I also got involved with election integrity work. And then after that, you know, I was discouraged. I was very discouraged after seeing what happened in 2020. But then I came across someone by the name of Audrey Trujillo at this rally in Santa Fe. It was right at the Capitol against critical race theory. And I know a lot about critical race theory because I went to the Santa Fe Community College. There's a lot of it there. And I briefly spoke about my experience with critical race theory. And I met her, and then we just started talking over and over. And then we ended up going to rallies. And then she asked me, would you like to help me on my campaign? And I was like, sure. You know, what do you want me to be? Go knock on doors, volunteer. And she goes, well, like to be my campaign manager. Wow. And I was like, whoa, why me? You know, why me out of all the other people out there? And she saw potential in me, and I'm forever grateful for that. She's a very good friend of mine. And from then on out, I've been involved. And then in our county, we were looking at, because all our county officers, most of them had either retired or they just didn't want to be involved anymore, especially after the results of the 2022 election. And I was looking for candidates for second vice chair. I was looking for them. I was like, is there anyone who would want to take this responsibility? Because we had someone for chair, first vice chair, and then nobody was going in for second vice chair. And I figured to myself, you know what? I'm going to do this. I'm going to be the one to make the stand for my city. And we have done so much. We have done so much, especially encouraging the youth to come out. Because at our meetings in the prior leadership of the previous county officers, there would be like maybe, just maybe, a dozen people may show up, maybe even less than that. It wasn't very enthusiastic. But now at our last meeting, we are getting like around 50 to like 80 people.
Wow, that's great.
At our meetings. And it's like, and we're even at the point where we're thinking to ourselves, we might have to get a new venue, because it's like, and not all of these people are Republicans. Not all of these people are Republicans. These are people who are independents. These are Democrats who just are frustrated with their own party.
People who are thinking for themselves.
Yes.
They're people finally seeing that there's a difference. But I want to mention too, you're, at least compared to me, you're a young guy.
Yeah.
And you're the future of what the Republican Party becomes. And you mentioned, you know, you're part Hispanic, part Black. That's in the Democrat Party. In the Republican Party, what you are is an American.
Yes, absolutely. That's another reason why I'm a Republican, because you look at the other side. They want to put you in a category like, oh, if you're Black, then you're a victim. Or if you're white, you're an oppressor. Or if you're, and if, and even more specific for New Mexico, if you're Hispanic or Latino in New Mexico, you're an oppressor. And if you're Native here in New Mexico, you're a victim. They always want to put you in a category. And I've never liked that, because it's like how I was raised. I was raised to think for myself, to think that everybody, when it comes to our skin color, you can't change that. But at the same time, that does not define you. And I was raised to look at somebody, you know, how we are talking right now as Americans, my equal. Not once did I think about, oh, you're white, so you're automatically in this category. You're automatically right in this box. And it's like, that's not how I was raised.
That's how they divide us and get us fighting with each other. No, you and I are both Americans and we're New Mexicans.
I mean, with New Mexico, and it's so unique because there are families who go back generations. And even my family goes back generations. We're very proud of our culture.
Sure.
And we're very proud of our history. And especially if you look at Santa Fe, I mean, look what they've done to the Soldiers Monument in the downtown Santa Fe Plaza. That's no longer there. And even then, even though we're proud of our culture and heritage, it's like we just see each other as equals. In northern New Mexico, they're saying, like, you're my primo, you're my prima, you're my, you know, hermano or hermana. You know, you're, that's, you know, it's like, that's what we're raised at. When you see, especially here in Santa Fe, you just see like total disregard for the culture and history, because they're just trying to destroy it because they think they know better. They think they know better than us, except we're the ones who have been here. We're the ones who lived here. Our children are born here, and some of us, we're going to be buried here. And that's what it's about. And that's what it's all about, is looking at all of us as Americans. Because when I look at you, I don't see, oh, you're a white guy. I just see, oh, you're my fellow American.
Exactly. That's what we need to do. Mm-hmm. And this country can unite and be strong again if we quit dividing ourselves into these little groups. I wanted to ask you, before we run out of time, what you see as the future for the Republican Party, and especially in Santa Fe?
Well, what I would like to see is that I am young. I'm only 20. I literally turned 22 recently. And what I want to see is that when people look at folks like us, there are some who will say that, oh, you're only 22, that you don't know anything, and that you're just not taken seriously. And you take a look at like one of our representatives, John Block, he's 26, I believe, and he's one of our youngest representatives. And it's like, they don't take you seriously when you're young. And I think what the party should do is like, look at our young folks, because we are the future. We are the ones who are going to carry this value forward for the next generation, and that generation is going to take over.
And the ones that are getting 80 people showing up to meetings now.
Exactly, exactly. You know, and
taking
it's like,
us in a new direction.
Exactly. And I think the only person, and I believe the only person that has really understood this would have to be Audrey Trujillo, because that was the greatest grassroots campaign that I've ever worked on. And she really is authentic and allowed me to be myself and allowed me to be like, oh, wow, I'm accepted. And I think what the Republican Party really has to do is be accepting of like younger people. Like, what are your ideas to move the party forward? Because we all believe in the same thing, right? We have the same goals. We may disagree on how to achieve those goals, but we all have the same goals. And if we can unite on that and respect other voices, because not all voices are necessarily Republican, but they have the same values as us. So I think with the Republican Party, they just need to be more open and accepting and respect those, especially those who are coming from the next generation who want to be part of the Republican Party.
I'm talking with Freddie Lopez. He is the second vice chair of the Santa Fe Republican Party. And if somebody is hearing us today and would like to get more information on the Republican Party in Santa Fe, how would they do that?
Well, you can visit our website at santafecountygop.com. You can also follow us on our official Facebook page, Republican Party of Santa Fe County. We also have a discussion group called the Republican Party of Santa Fe County Discussion Group on Facebook. And those are the best ways to get involved. Visit our website, santafecountygop.com. And we have our meetings at every third Thursday of the month. And we are just looking for anybody. Like the way I see it, if you believe in freedom and liberty, you are a Republican in my book. That's how I see it.
Brady, thank you.
Thank you so much, Derek.
I'll be right back with more with the chairman of our Republican Party of New Mexico, Steve Pierce, in just a moment on Inside New Mexico.
Attention, New Mexico veterans. If you were honorably discharged from the U.S. Armed Forces, you've earned state and federal benefits, and the New Mexico Department of Veteran Services is standing by to assist you. State benefits include a veteran's property tax exemption, education and training, and transportation services. We can also assist with claims for federal VA benefits. The state of New Mexico and this radio station thank you for your service. More information at nmveterans.org or 1-866-433-8387.
Welcome back to Inside New Mexico. As one of the poorest states in the nation, we are feeling the economic inflation harder than some of the more affluent states in the nation.
Yeah, the Pinion Post last week put up an article from the USA Today, which highlights the states that are most, and New Mexico, again, is among the top states that are hurting from Joe Biden's inflation. And the shame is that all of New Mexico's delegation voted against a measure that would stop the inflation. It would have us start using American oil rather than importing foreign oil, and all of New Mexico's delegations voted against it. New Mexico's oil industry is the heartbeat of our economy. And if you can't get your representatives in Washington to vote for the industry that provides almost 45% of the state's tax budget from one industry, you can't get the support in Washington for that, then it's a terrible day for New Mexico. And we're going to find that our gross receipts are going to start falling because that production will be easing out of country, easing out of New Mexico. People will have fewer jobs in New Mexico. The pay will be less for those jobs. And all in all, our delegation in Washington is feeding the problem, not curing the problem. And so this unease that people are experiencing comes despite the fact that nationwide we're seeing pretty low unemployment figures. New Mexico has got high figures, but other states have pretty low figures, and still adults are feeling unnerved about the future. And it's because they're knowing they make a little bit more money, but they're spending a lot more money. As I go into restaurants, I see that the crowds are far fewer than you would expect. See that houses are not selling like they used to because the cost of buying a house is going up because the Federal Reserve is having to increase the interest rate to slow down this inflation that we're finding. And it's going to hurt people, again, like New Mexico, more than any other state.
I was in a chain restaurant, nice restaurant, over the weekend, and people were waiting outside for a table. And I wondered why when there were empty tables inside the restaurant. Well, it's because they couldn't get enough staff to serve the whole restaurant. They can't get people who want to work anymore.
Yeah, KRQE had a really good segment on that. And New Mexico, again, is at the very top of a bad list. We rank number 4 in the nation on trying to fill jobs with skilled workers. About 8% of our jobs were open last month. This is not kind of like 7 or 8 year old data. This is last month. Over the entire last year, over 7% of the jobs stayed open in New Mexico all the time. I think that people were trained during COVID that they don't have to work to feed their family. And so you have a lot of folks that are just not willing to go to work again. The economy is under a lot of pressure coming from the Biden inflation and coming from the fact that people learned during COVID they don't have to work. And it's going to take a long time to straighten these messes out. These are things that Republican values would cure. And so we just have to stay steady, repeating our values that if you're able-bodied, you should work. You shouldn't be living at someone else's expense if you're able to get out and get a job. All of us would help those people who can't help themselves. That's never been the question. But the Democrats don't mind destroying the economy, and Republicans want to hold the economy together. Republicans believe that the nation is served best when people have productive jobs to work at, when they can find prosperity. They're able to buy a little bit bigger house next year than they had this year, maybe get a new car, send their kids to college. Those are all things that prosperity means, and Republicans support those, and Democrats want this malaise that's going on. And so as our listeners are watching and looking at which candidates to vote for, keep in mind there's a huge difference between the free market Republicans and the socialist Democrats.
Yeah, I think we saw this in real life. When people have jobs and they're making good money, they don't need government assistance.
The free market works. Socialism never works.
PNM is the electricity provider for the Albuquerque metro area where I am. I'm in Rio Rancho. And they have put out press releases twice now warning that we could have rolling blackouts in the heat of the summer. They haven't said this, that it's because that they shut down the San Juan coal-fired generating plant in the Four Corners, but the releases came out after they shut that down, and now everybody's using their air conditioners. We're up near 100 degrees here in the Albuquerque metro, and they've shut off our reliable sources of energy before they've replaced them with their green energy. Okay, put up your solar panels or your wind farms, but don't shut off what works until you replace it. They're doing it backwards.
Yeah, and that's, I think, caused by governmental pressure. Again, the Democrats really are leaning heavy on this whole idea of climate change, and they're willing to shut down the coal-fired power plants that provide, basically nationwide, coal-fired power plants provide 50% of the power. So you can imagine that New Mexico's probably, if it's average, is going to have about half the power available this summer. Now, know about Albuquerque, but this last week in Hobbs, we had temperatures that were ranging from 105 to 108. Earlier today, as we record this, not in the hottest part of the day here in Lee County, we're already at 104. So people are using their air conditioners much more. It's a power load problem. And PNM has shut down basically, let's say, half of the power that's available to us. And so you think, okay, wind and solar provide less than 10%. The estimates are somewhere down in the 4 to 6%
when the
range.
Wind blows and the sun shines.
Yeah, and the sun shines a lot right now in New Mexico, but the wind's not always blowing. But even when over a period of time, the experts in the field say that wind and solar are about 12% efficient. That means that when you need power, you're going to have it about 12% of the time. And so this reduction of coal-fired power, and that's clean coal, by the way, those generators have been cleaned up dramatically. So when you shut down those in favor of providing more wind and solar, you're going to pay with blackouts. And California last year was experiencing those, and New Mexico is going to have it this year. PNM says so. I will tell you where the real answer will be, and that's when PNM applies to the government of New Mexico to pay for its stranded cost. That means that if they had equipment in that plant that still had life to it, and I've been told that all of the generators had life and some of them had a long life left, then when PNM approaches the state to reimburse them for that stranded cost, now you're going to find out what the real truth is.
I've been talking with Steve Pierce, the chairman of the Republican Party of New Mexico. If you've been listening to us and would like more information on the Republican Party of New Mexico, check out their website at newmexico.gop. The party has a Facebook page and a Twitter account. The handle is at newmexicogop. If you would like to speak to someone in person, call party headquarters at 505-298-3662. That's 505-298-3662. For Steve Pierce, I'm Derek Underhill, and we look forward to meeting with you again at this time next week on Inside New Mexico.